Well, I wonder if you've got any last-minute Christmas shopping to do this week. If you're struggling for some ideas, let me tell you about some unusual Christmas gifts that I came across recently. For just under £15, you can buy yourself an acre of the moon. Now, as the advertising blurb says, it's a gift guaranteed to send a loved one into outer space. If location, location, location is the heart of every piece of property you buy, then an acre on the moon sounds like a pretty good deal to me. Slightly difficult to visit, but under £15. Now, if you're slightly more flush with cash, what about a life-size Lego sculpture? For just £40,000, you can get yourself sculpted into small bricks. I don't know if you get a discount if you're a small person, but that was the price I was quoted. Now, finally, if you've managed to beat the recession altogether and you've just got money to burn, what about having your own golf course in the back garden? You can have that designed by Jack Nicklaus himself, and that will only set you back £600,000. Well, I think most of us are looking at the acre on the moon, aren't we, if we're struggling for a Christmas gift this week. Well, that first Christmas also had its share of unusual presents. Look back at what was said about some of the first visitors to Jesus. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. Now, Jesus was a relatively newborn baby. At most, he's a young toddler by this stage, and I think those gifts are hardly what new parents, Mary and Joseph, would have hoped for. You'd have thought that some baby clothes or some nappies or cuddly toys would have been in order, maybe even a hot casserole. I heard it said last week that if these had been wise women instead of wise men, then that's what they'd have brought, a hot casserole. Well, these gifts, they're not simply unusual and unconventional. They seemed actually totally inappropriate, because myrrh in particular was the perfume that was used for embalming bodies at death. Now, I've got a young nephew named Tim. He's going to be about 6 months old this Christmas. And imagine I show up on Christmas Day and I've got this beautifully wrapped present, but inside I put a miniature coffin. Now, that's a great way, isn't it, to attract a kind of restraining order and certainly not be invited back for the new year. But this is the shocking reality of the presents. He received a spice for their bodies. And the other gifts, they're no less surprising either. So we need to dig under this and find out what's going on, because I think the presents really teach us about the significance of Jesus' birth. They open up for us the meaning of Christmas. And if we can understand what these gifts represent, then we can start to understand why Jesus was born. Now, the events of Jesus' birth, they must have some importance. We don't celebrate, do we, any other birth quite like this. Why so much fuss about Jesus? Well, let's take a look at the three gifts and see how they unlock this for us. But I do warn you, as we go through this morning, just be prepared for a few shocks. The gifts unlock the meaning of Christmas, but they might not be quite what we expect. Well, the first gift we're told that the Magi brought was gold. Now, gold is always associated with kingship, with royalty in the Bible, and I guess it still is today. When we see the Queen travelling to those events of state importance, she travels in a golden coach. And we can see that this is how the wise men viewed Jesus from what they say to King Herod. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and they asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews?" The wise men were looking for somebody who had been born king. And when Herod's own gang of wise men go and check their ancient writings, they find an expectation of a coming king who will arrive in the small town of Bethlehem. And verse 6 is clear up on the screen. "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." So the one to be born was a ruler, a leader, and a king. And so the Magi's response when they eventually make it to the house is that they bow down and worship. So here's the first shocking truth today. Jesus Christ is king. Not just any king, but he is the king. over all. He is God's appointed ruler over all other kings and leaders, even over all of mankind. The whole of the Jewish people, they had been waiting centuries for the king to arrive. And here he is, lying in a feeding trough. Shocks us, doesn't it, that a king would arrive in such humble circumstances. You don't get any booper medical care here. There's no pristine white blankets. We're in a filthy and stinky stable. But I think the bigger shock is that the baby of Bethlehem, he wants a claim over us. He demands it as the king. What right does Jesus have to this title of royalty? Why should he be the king? Well, Matthew tells us again, earlier in his book, in chapter 1, he says the virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. Now, Jesus claims that sovereign right over us because he is God stepping into the world. He is the creator who enters his creation in skin and bone as a real human man. Now, I think most of us this morning know deep down that there is a God to whom we owe our allegiance. Some people try and live their lives and deny that God exists altogether, but that's a really hard thing to follow through, isn't it? I don't know if you saw the atheist campaign that was in London earlier this year. They put posters on the buses. I don't know if you're up in London and saw any of them, but the posters said this up on the screen. There's probably no God, so stop worrying and enjoy life. Even the atheist, the person who says there is no God, will only say probably. Because I think when we're at our most honest, we know there is a God. But this God, we like to keep him boxed up, don't we? A bit like our Christmas decorations. He can come out at special occasions, that's okay, a wedding or a funeral or certainly Christmas. But most of the year we'll just kind of pop him away back in the box, out of sight and out of mind. We certainly don't want God exercising any control or authority over us. We live to all intents and purposes as if there is no God. I guess the way we act is illustrated in the story of a little boy who desperately wanted to play Joseph in the school nativity play. This boy was given the more minor part of the innkeeper instead, and the boy was really sulky about not getting the part he wanted, and he waited for a suitable moment to take his revenge. It was the night of the play. The school hall was packed with teachers, with all the proud parents, and Mary and Joseph came toward him and they delivered that familiar line. Is there any room at the inn? And the boy saw his opportunity to steal the show. With a broad smile, he replied, yeah, there's plenty of room. Come right in. Now, poor Mary and Joseph, they stood there dumbfounded, not knowing what to do. And the whole production just descended into chaos. I think there's something of that little boy in all of us. God, the director, has fashioned a fantastic play. He's designed this marvellous set that we live in, this world. He's given us to enjoy. We're here to live serving and enjoying him, but we have stolen the show. We've not been content for God to be in charge, and so we've torn up the script. And we've made ourselves the star, made ourselves the centre. The contest for the Christmas number one in the charts, it used to be an exciting race in my childhood, but it's become a bit of an obvious procession in recent years with the X Factor winner. I checked the odds, you know, not for a bet, but just to see who was favourite. And the X Factor winner, Alexandra Burke, is about as certain a favourite as you will ever get. But I want to suggest there's an even more important contest for number one that is going on this Christmas. And the outcome is much less certain. It is who will be number one in our lives. Will it be King Jesus, or will I continue to assert that I am the centre of everything? Will I bow before Jesus as the Magi did, and will I own him as my king, or will I remain in stubborn opposition to his right to rule? Well, let's move on to the second gift. The unusual gift, number two, is incense. There's some incense before it's burnt up on the screen. Now, this gift has a lot of Bible meaning behind it. It comes out of the first half of the Bible, the Old Testament, and it was used by the Jews in their religion. And if we boil it all down, incense was used as a symbol of the people's relationship with God. The gift is telling us, you see, that Jesus has come to make a difference to that relationship. So here is shocking truth number two. Our relationship with God needs fixing. Because having treated God with such disdain, having rejected his kingship, how do we feel God thinks about that? We've got to face the fact this morning that God just doesn't sit idly by and keep indulging us like a kind of big Father Christmas in the sky. He's always jolly, he's always ready just to dish out the gifts to us. But that is not where God is. We can't treat the Creator this way. We can't treat anyone this way and get away with it. So is it any wonder that I have to tell you today that God is angry with how we've lived? He's angry with how we've treated him. He is a God who is full of integrity, and he won't let us commit treason against heaven and not hold us accountable for that. And that is why today we feel such a sense of remoteness from God. The Bible calls it sin when we assert our own will and displace God as king. And that sin creates a massive distance, a great void between ourselves and God. Listen to how the songwriter Sting put it in one of his songs. Everyone I know is lonely and God so far away, and my heart belongs to no one. So now sometimes I pray, please take the space between us and fill it up some way. We try and fill that gap somehow. We fill our lives with loads of different things. And Christmas is full of some of the best things of life. Presents and family and good food and drink and parties. And yet, once that last party popper has gone off and the turkey is eaten, what is left? If we're honest with ourselves, if we're truly honest, we know that there is this void between ourselves and God. We know in our hearts we're not on right terms. We're not on good terms with God. But Jesus came to do something about it. Jesus was sent by God to repair the damage. He came to restore the broken relationship. This is the great news today. Although we are alienated from God by the way we have lived, God has taken the initiative to fix things. He's come to deal with that sin problem, our rebellion against God. So how could he do that? What was the plan? How can Jesus solve the issue? Well, that brings us to the third gift, the gift of myrrh. We said earlier that this was the perfume for embalming dead bodies. Why such a bizarre, why such a strange gift for a baby? Well, here is the third shocking truth. Jesus was the baby who was born to die. We are born to live, aren't we? We're born to go here and go there. We're born to achieve this or that. We're born to have this relationship or that relationship. But Jesus was born with a shadow of death over him right from the start. There's a famous painting of Jesus and he's working as a carpenter, and the light casts a shadow of him on the wall, and it's in the shape of a cross. Jesus was the extraordinary unschooled teacher. He was able to perform amazing miracles that were attested to by his friends and enemies alike. He loved people. He showed them compassion in quite astonishing ways. But his death, that was the crowning moment of his life. As a king, we'd have thought that Jesus would come to a throne and live in a palace. But Jesus always lived in poverty. He was laid in a manger rather than being born in a mansion. He never travelled in style. The best he got was a fishing boat and just a simple donkey. And instead of a royal coronation, he was crowned just once on a Roman cross, wearing not gold, but a crown of thorns. The myrrh tells us that even from the beginning, his death was the focal point of his life. Let me try to explain what was going on when Jesus died. We saw that essence of our rebellion is that we substitute ourselves for God. We take the place of king and we dethrone him. The essence of God's rescue in Jesus is God substituting himself for us. We put ourselves where he deserves to be. So to fix things, God puts himself where we deserve to be. And that is what happened in Jesus' death on the cross. Jesus was there dying, taking the anger of God against our sin. He died there on our behalf as our substitute to pay the penalty that our sin deserved. He put himself where we deserve to be. It was the greatest swap in history. He took my sin, he took your sin, and he laid it on Jesus. And he took Jesus' goodness, and he laid it on me. And that is the wonderful news of Christmas. God could have washed his hands of the human race, but instead he entered history himself in the baby of Bethlehem, and he suffered on our behalf 30 or so years later in Jerusalem. This is a gift above all gifts. You can keep your acre on the moon. You can keep your Lego sculpture. You can keep even the golf course in the back garden. This is out of this world stuff, that the Son of God should give himself for you at the cross. Jesus dies so we can receive the forgiveness of God for our treason, so we can know a relationship mended, so we can bridge that aching void that is between ourselves and God. So as we wrap up this morning, I have to ask you, what response will you make to what you've heard? Because the question that these three gifts leave us with, and what Matthew's hinting at through his entire reading, is who will be the king in our lives? Matthew shows us really two options. Firstly, there's the right and the sensible response. It's the response of the Magi, the wise men. How did they show that they acknowledged that Jesus was king? Well, verse 11 says in our reading that they bowed down and worshipped. They took, as it were, the crowns from their own heads and they laid them at the feet of Jesus Christ. They bowed down, they surrendered their own sovereignty, and they said, Jesus is Lord. He makes the rules. I live to serve him. I want the forgiveness that he offers. He is the boss. He is the king. Now, you may think today that you're not religious. Perhaps you came here to enjoy a few mince pies and to sing some carols with friends. But has God been pricking your conscience in the things that we've been saying? Do you know that you've treated God badly in his world, just as I have? Well, Jesus didn't come for the religious. He came for you and me. He came for us. He came for all who know that they've not lived as they should have before God, but who know they can't do anything about it themselves. We can't put ourselves right with God, but Jesus is the answer today. He is the one who will make peace between ourselves and our Creator. But then there is another response in Matthew's account, and we need to face it, because it's the reaction of King Herod. Now, Herod seemed to be keen to get to know more about Jesus. Do you remember what the reading said? Go and make careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. Herod sounded really good. He sounded really keen to get to know more about Jesus. But in fact, we find out later that he wanted to hunt Jesus down and get rid of him. He didn't want to give up his throne. He loved being in charge. And maybe that's where you are today. You give a good pretense of wanting to worship Jesus. You sing the carols heartily. You're a really nice, respectable person. You're good to others. You do your bit for charity at Christmas, and that's all good stuff. And yet deep down, you want to retain the right to rule your own life. Deep inside, you still want to be king. If that's where you are today, I do urge you to please think seriously about that, because we will all one day bow the knee to Jesus as king. That will happen. Jesus will be seen to be king, and one day he won't appear in the weakness of the baby in the manger, but he will appear in stunning royal majesty, and all shall see him. And I do urge you not to be forced to bow the knee first on that day. Kneel today while he offers you forgiveness and pardon and a new life for all those who return to him. I present to you today Jesus Christ, the King of the universe. And I urge you to give up on your own kingship and bow to him and know the forgiveness and the peace with God that he offers.